for this.
What is nothing?
Yeah, that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
Free socks.
What is something?
That's deep, bro. Deep Bro, Serious Questions with Silly People. I am your host, Christina P. Christina P. I was told to put the emphasis on the different syllable. Christina P. WNBC. Hi, guys. I hope you're well. I hope you're, as I record this, it's Monday. I know the week is beginning. I don't know, though. In the world of stand-up comedians, there's never a sense of like, this is the beginning of your week, this is the end, because you usually work, you know, Thursday through Sunday or whatever the hell. What the fuck cares? What am I talking about? Listen, if you're an adult, every day is a day that you got to do shit, right? Is there ever a sense of like, here's the end to responsibility and here's the beginning? And no, it's a constant battle. It's a constant, influx of responsibility, punctuated by maybe moments of rest, and then you're back in it, man. You're back in the grind, back in the grind. Listen, before I start, I want to announce some show dates I am doing. Hiller, first of all, I'm at the Comedy Store. Usually Saturday nights, I do the early show, the 8 o'clock show. I usually do the OR and then I pop up to the Belly. If you're in town and you're like, I'd love to see a great show, go to the Comedy Store. It's undergone an amazing transformation. It is the place to be right now in LA. I think every few years, one of the clubs gets an insurgence of like popularity. And right now the Comedy Store is hot as fuck. On any given night, you will see Joe Rogan. You will see Bill Burr. Chris Rock did a drop in to practice for, what is it, the Emmys. Jerry Seinfeld came and Red Band asked him how he wipes sitting up or standing down. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever said at the Comedy Store. And, you know, hey, look, hits. Everybody's going there now. It's the hip spot. So that, and then also, let me see. Oh, okay. Is it fucking April already? Holy cow. April 1 and 2, I'm at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank. Get your tickets at my website, thousandranch.com, thousandranch.com. The link's there. Also, April 7th, I'm at the Irvine Improv in Irvine, California, 8 o'clock show. April 20th, Ventura Comedy Club, Ventura, California, also 8 p.m. And then May 27th through May 28th. Just May 27th and May 28th, the Comedy Store in La Jolla. You'll notice I do early shows. You guys see that 8 p.m. hour? Well, it's because I have a three-month-old baby, and I can't really stay up late because, well, I wake up at 4 in the morning. I wake up at 6 in the morning. We sleep again for another couple hours, and then I'm up. So, yeah, I've had to rearrange how I do things just a little bit to make things work. Which brings me to my topic today. I got an email from my homeboy Roger in Brooklyn. We met a few years ago, and he asks about children and creativity. And it's been like, I read the email a while ago, and it's just been stuck in my head because it is a thing, dude. It is a thing. And I want to open the topic up. It's not just children that can hinder, throw a wrench in, generally fuck up your life to the point where you really don't feel like being creative. It can be a divorce. It can be, sickness. It can be a death. It can be anything that will make you feel like not doing anything creative ever again. So I'm going to talk about that, bros. But first, all right, we did the shows. Hey, listen, Amazon, I know you shop on that because you're smart because you listen to this show. Do me a flave. Do me a solid. When you shop on Amazon, all you got to do before you go to that website, you go to thatsdebropodcast.com, click on the banner at the bottom of every post. You'll see like a little Amazon square. Click on that and then it'll take you straight to Amazon. It's got like a tracking code and just do your shopping as you normally would. It just kicks back a little tiny chunk of change every time someone buys something. There's no conspiracy here, guys. Listen, mama needs money. Mama needs money. And I think that's it. Is that it? Oh, hey, also, That's Deep Row is brought to you by Sattva Mattress Company. Sattva, S-A-A-T-V-A. This is a product I believe in firmly. I, for many years, inherited a mattress from a comedian friend who inherited it from yet another comedian friend. My husband and I slept on this dog bed for about, 8 years. I didn't tell him where I got it. It's so disgusting. And then one day we were like, hey, we have around $800 somewhere, don't we? And if not, who cares? Let's put that on a credit card and let's buy ourselves a brand new mattress. And that's when I found Sattva. Because for about that price, you can get, we got a king-sized bed and it is so amazing. The quality is, it's beautiful. It's 100% cotton. You don't have that weird smell of synthetic stuff. It's soft. We got Luxury Firm, which is their flagship model. And I don't quote me on that $800 price. I think it's maybe $800 or $900, which is still ridiculously inexpensive for basically a high quality mattress that you're getting. They deliver it to you. It's an online company. There's no overhead. You don't have to deal with salespeople. I can't stand salespeople. I know, I'm sorry, it's your job to harass, but I cannot fucking deal with it. So I'd rather just be antisocial and do it from my house. Shows up, they install it, they take away your old mattress for like a nominal fee, and you're up and running, and it's the best. Sattvamattress.com, S-A-A-T-V-A mattress.com. Do yourself a favor, hook yourself up. There's no reason to be unhappy in life. There's no reason to suffer like we did for as many years as we did on a fucking dog bed. All right, here we go. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. Did you like how I sing? Okay, I love the Breeders. I'm gonna start with the Breeders because, well, I'll just tell you the background of this song before I play it. I, on the road, when I was a road comic, hard fucking core road comic, there are times you don't want to perform. There are times you are so depressed. You're in some town that is an asshole of the universe. You have eaten such bad food for days on end, and it is Sunday. It is Sunday, the Lord's Day, and you're in a hotel. You're away from your family. You're away from anybody you really know and trust. You've been sitting in this hotel room since about Wednesday night when you flew in. Your hotel room is littered with empty wine bottles, cups that you've been microwaving oatmeal in. Maybe if you've got a cool little kitchenette, it's got some spaghetti hardened on the drainer that you've been eating spaghetti with ragu sauce and shaky cheese on. Chicken strip wrappers, whatever other depressing litter that is in your hotel room. And you're not staying in a nice hotel. You know, it's an average. Maybe a Courtyard Marriott, which is fucking huge to a starting comic. And well, anyway, it's showtime. It's 7 o'clock. You're getting ready. And God damn it, from the depth of your being, there's no way you can entertain people tonight. There is nothing funny going on. There is nothing bright in your world that will make you want to go out and say the same tired shit you've been saying since Thursday night when you did your first show. And that's when I play the Breeders. This one song, I swear to God, for some reason, I play this song and it would always put me in a right place. It would straighten me out and I would be somewhat motivated to be a comedian again. It's funny how that works. Okay, here we go. This is the song. This is basically the song that took me off the suicide ledge a few times on the road. Okay, it's the Breeders. Always the fucking Kim Deal, dude. Come on, Kim Deal.
Sings a lot of your songs.
unusual, right? It's not like a typical singer voice today. Everyone sounds the same to me. I'm just stuck in the 90s. When you are. But she's got like this cool, it's like a cool girl voice, right? Like, it's a little high, but not like, it's not so high that you're like, oh, she's been molested as a child. It's not like dumb Barbie girl high. It's really, I just love her voice. Kim Deal. Kim Deal, guys. Everything goes back to Kim Deal. So there we go. That's the song that brought me down from the ledge many, many weekends when I was on the road, just trying to muster up the fucking anything to be creative that day. That's really what it is, you know, because I think that any creative field that you choose to work in, you know, everyone, these glamour industries, they're called glamour jobs, right? Like models, whatever, writers, actors, comedians, singers, it all seems really glamorous. And, you know, people are like, well, you lay around all day and then at night you work for like an hour. Whoopee. And there's kind of a little bit more to it than that. I mean, that's the image of it. And I'm sure there are some comics that can do that. But look, if you want to be good at what you do, it's really not that simple. And there's a lot of, you know, business that goes into being creative. It's more than a full-time gig. There's no such thing as clocking out. And it's constant. But anyways, let's get into it. There's this email I got from Roger. Super cool dude. I remember you, of course, from Brooklyn. Okay, here we go. I'm a father of two boys, 7 and 5. Yikes. I don't know how you do it. Everyone talks about all the rote stuff, lack of sleep, hygiene troubles, to say the least. Holy cow. No one ever talks about how mentally exhausting the whole experience is, especially if you're trying to be the kind of parent that your parents were not. Absolutely, dude. To that end, I wondered if you thought about creativity as a topic for the show. The reason I also bring it up in conjunction with the Bitches show, because he wrote earlier that he liked the Bitches Be Lying show, is because of my own experience as a writer. I know that after becoming a parent, it became extremely difficult to have the creative time I enjoyed when I was childless. In fact, it's only now that I feel like I'm emerging from that rut, and you saw how old my kids are. I found that a mental switch occurred after becoming a dad, and the times that I would spend just thinking creatively were now spent obsessing over my kids and how I was doing as a parent. Not to mention the time actually writing and the creative process went right out the window. I wonder if you'll experience the same challenge. Hey, at least I'm giving you a heads up. Okay, so yes, right. Absolutely. Hey, let's plug in. For those of you who don't have kids and give a fuck about kids, because believe me, I was the same person, didn't give a fuck about hearing about people's kids, so I sympathize. Yeah, listen, dude. In my opinion, like anything can take away your ability to be creative. Kids are a major wrench because they're time thieves, right? Major time sucks. Especially if you're a writer, time is the kind of what you are, that's your currency, right? You spend a lot of time writing, and I know people that wake up before their kids to write at like 5 a.m. or after the kids go to bed. I can't imagine having the energy or the strength to do that. But anyway, yeah, absolutely. Now here's the rub. It's not just kids that can suck your life force from you to the point where you don't want to be creative. It can be a divorce. I've known many a comedian who was ruined by a divorce for quite a while. It can be a death of someone close to you that can just suck away any sort of wanting to do anything. It can be illness that can overcome you and fuck up your life for quite a while. So, you know, like I said, this email really stuck with me because I think it brings up a broader topic, which is to do it anyway, which is to keep going in spite of whatever the fuck it is going on in your life. And well, I say this because like, you know, doing stand-up right now for me is very different than it was before. And only because, not only, but one of the major reasons is that I can't remember things. That's one of the problems of sleep deprivation. And this kid is that I don't really remember jokes the way I did. I have a hard time staying up past 8 p.m. at night. And my brain just doesn't fire in the same way. Now, having said that, there's benefits to it, okay? Because I don't give a fuck. I give so many fucks less than I did before. And what I've found is that the less I am beholden to how I did things in the past, and the more I accept that I'm going to forget stuff, and I'm going to kind of lean into being imperfect and allowing the imperfections of my performances to just going to let it ride, bro. It's gotten a lot easier for me. And oddly enough, I dare say better, because I don't have, I don't have the time to criticize myself as much as I used to, frankly, with the kid. I realized that I don't think as much as I used to. And is that really such a bad thing? Especially because most of my thoughts were pretty useless, as we talked about in the last episode of That's Deep, Bro. Most of the shit your brain says to you isn't that productive. I would say that 90% of the stuff that goes on in my head really doesn't serve me or you or anybody else. It's just me, you know, recycling the same dumb stuff over and over. So to have that space taken up by caring for a living thing is kind of a blessing. A blessing in the skies, as they say. And the whole year I was pregnant, I had a puppy that I was raising, and that really helped too, to take me out of myself and put emphasis on like, oh, that thing needs to be let out at 4 a.m. And it stopped making me think about how miserable I was physically being pregnant, you know? So I'm not sure that kids or anything are really a hindrance. It just kind of, I mean, look, man, and bro, I can't even compare my life to yours. 5 and 7 years old. I don't even know what that's like. I don't know what it's like to have 2 children. I don't know any of this. But I can say that historically there have been people that have achieved massively amazing feats of science and art and philosophy and comedy that have had many children. Phyllis Diller, if you read her book, Like a Lampshade in a Whorehouse, her autobiography, she had, I believe, 5 children and a deadbeat husband who she swore the character of Fang was not based on. Yeah, right. And in spite of a deadbeat husband who she had to kind of support financially, and in spite of 5 kids, she became arguably one of the hugest, you know, female comics ever. Roseanne Barr, one of my idols, had 3 children, one of which I'm very good friends with. And despite that, managed to achieve levels of success that were amazing and created a sitcom that changed how we saw, the traditional sitcom mom. Friedrich Nietzsche, completely fucking insane towards the end of his life. Suffered of syphilis and brain hemorrhage and was in, you know, racked with pain, and had a miserable life. Ended up writing some of the most, you know, crazy philosophy and stuff that changed the world of philosophy, under tremendous strain and duress. And, you know, and I think the point of this is, you know, it's to act in spite of, to act with what you got going on, you know? And what I've learned as a comedian over the years, it's like, you know, look, man, the Sunday show, that was always a struggle for me. And sometimes it ended up being the best show that I did all week, because I would go into it fucking miserable and not wanting to, and then somewhere channel that misery and that suffering into a really killer show, because I just carried it with me onto stage. Channeling is what I mean. Sorry. That's the word. Let's back it up again. We'll go back to channeling in a second. And I think what's dangerous about Roger's email and what's really a trap that all human beings go through, and I don't think it's just Roger in particular, I think it's the trap of, you know, when I'm childless, I can be creative. When I'm 30 years old, I can start doing that thing that I've wanted to do. When I'm divorced, when I'm married, once I have a kid, I can start living. Once I, you know, I don't know, buy a house, that's when I can start living. Once I graduate from college, that's when I can begin X, Y, and Z. You know, when I feel better, I can start doing this project that I've been thinking about for years and years. You know, and I think that's misguided, because I, you know, from what I've seen in the world, people do things in conjunction with the crappy things that are happening in their lives. Abraham Lincoln was racked with depression, suffered greatly from depression, and kind of in spite of that, Durr became the president and put his head on the penny. Duh. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? You know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like despite, I don't want to say that word, because that sounds like you're fighting with what is wrong or what is happening. It's just kind of like, you know what, dude? There's always going to be a program in the background running. There's never an optimal time in your life to do shit, to be creative, there's always going to be an obstacle. There's always going to be something. Like, I remember being really poor in about 2007, really poor and really scared, because I was transitioning into becoming a full-time feature act. And that's an existence where you don't know if you will be working that week. You don't know how you're going to get your money. And you make maybe like $350 a week, no lie. Maybe you clear that. And there were nights where I would just lay awake, panicked. How the fuck am I going to do this? And I remember thinking to myself, how am I supposed to be creative in this time? How am I supposed to be creative when my very day-to-day existence is in peril? You know, like, how the fuck do you write jokes when you're so panicked about eating, paying the rent? Will I work again? All these thoughts. And that was kind of like the training for me, because I went, wait a minute, what if instead of seeing joke writing or whatever it is you do as needing to have optimal circumstance to access, like, what if I could find a way to channel this anxiety and this horribleness into what I do already? And what would that do creatively for me? And it was right around that time that I was eating more than I usually did. Yes, I was starting to get fat. And I just thought one day, like, oh, I'm so fucking fat. This is such a stupid example. And I used to bring my belly out on stage and wiggle it around. And it became like the thing that people really enjoyed. And I was like, oh, that's funny. And that came from the deepest, darkest place in me, the most hateful part of me. My most self-loathing is what generated sometimes the coolest stuff. And even now, to this day, if I'm happy and stuff is going right, and I don't write or create good things, really. It's not until I have to access the dark side of the forest, and that's just me. I don't know. Maybe that's something wrong. Hold on. I'm hearing a scratching sound, and it sounds like my little dog is trying to claw her way out of her crate. Hold on. All right. Found out what it was. It's actually the gas company changing out our meter. It sounded like an animal squirreling, you know? I was like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing to my house? You better get your life. All right, so where were we? Okay, there's never an optimal time. There's never perfect circumstances. And in fact, I dare say, the more horrible my life has been, the more it forced me to access parts that I would normally overlook. It was in the dark stuff that I always had a better time with, and maybe because I'm more centered when I'm a little dark. I don't know. That's just me, dude. Maybe for you, it's when you're happy, and so maybe you should strive to be happy before you sit down and write. And also, Roger, dude, I hear you. Look, I used to sit down for hours every morning and write, but what I found is, hey, there's a nice window in the morning where my baby loves to chill with me. And now I sit him in his little seat, I have my coffee, and I write. But instead of having 2 hours, you know, I can sneak 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there. And, you know, there's a lot of time In between stuff, my kid sleeps on me a lot, so that's when I can think about jokes and I'll have my phone with me and I'll write them down. It's like there's moments where you actually do have time that don't feel that way. Driving's great. I don't know. For me, my brain's always been like a secret playground that, I mean, that's being an only child, that it's always somewhere I can go. You know, I don't listen to a lot of stuff most people say to me because I'm already thinking it. I'm thinking, there's a party in my head, bro. I don't know. So, yes, there is no time. And the greatest people in our history have done things in conjunction with depression, in conjunction, in addition to children, in addition to physical ailments like Nietzsche. And also, hey man, there is a guy I knew. I mean, there are people that have achieved amazing things. There's this guy, Mike Maliani, who I used to work for at Deke Entertainment, now defunct. This guy was dyslexic, failed out of school, didn't make it, I don't think, through high school, and couldn't read, just, you know, couldn't do it. And instead took up drawing and ended up working at Hanna-Barbera and was a great artist and eventually became the head of Deke, D-I-C, or the second guy up or whatever the fuck. But basically, Mike Maliani, one of my heroes, this guy couldn't write an email to save his life. But did he have to? No. That's the best part, because he worked in animation. He didn't have to do that stuff. He found a way to work with his strength, with and in spite of whatever the hell it was that that he had going on. And also too, I think there's a myth of genius. I think, you know, I was listening to this great interview on the Howard Stern show. This musician, he said, look, I'm not a genius. I just have to work really hard. And I wish I could remember the musician's name, because it was so cool. And I thought, yeah. And really, I don't know any. The comics that I've always thought were genius level, were amazing comedians, worked really, really hard. The dudes, the girls that you think are amazingly funny, spend a lot of time doing what they do. If you, Bill Burr, I know, works tirelessly. David Letterman would come home and watch his tape and hate himself and want to make it perfect. I know Dave Attell writes, rewrites, records, listens to. Joe Rogan, same thing, sits down every day, nurtures the ideas, writes, rewrites. My husband, Tom Segura, one of the funniest people on the fucking planet, I watch his process and I watch how he is vigilant and tireless. And it's, look, genius, I don't know. There are many, I don't know, maybe no bona fide, I don't know, genius, but I do know that hard work is some kind of, it's definitely a corollary. It's definitely related to this myth of genius. Yeah. And even the quote genius comedians that hit really young. Like if you look at Eddie Murphy, I think, who is a goddamn genius, was, I don't know now, but I mean, look, he recorded Delirious when he was what, 20, 21 years old. And Bill Hicks, man, that guy was a genius. But you look back and they started when they were 14. Bill Hicks started stand-up when he was, I think 13 is the first tape they have of him. You know, he went into a comedy club and did a set. 13. So by the time you're 20, you've already got 7 years under your belt. So the genius myth of, well, I don't have to work at it, I'm just special. Maybe, yeah, maybe there's a handful of people, definitely. I'm sure Mozart, you know, at some, like 5 years old, was writing music and blowing people's minds. But, you know, for the rest of us, it's a process. And creativity, I think, is the same as any other muscle. It is not, I think that's the illusion of creativity. Excuse me, that it just comes down from the ethers and like, oh, look at that, you know, you just came up with that right now. Like maybe, yeah, sometimes, maybe for some, but for most, I know that it's a thing to nurture, you know, like it's a muscle, like everything else. There's a process and a way that you go about things to access the good stuff. And sometimes shit, I think, does come to you in a flash where you go, oh, that would be great. And you try it and like, yes, that for some reason that. And then there are other bits that you work at and you work at and you work at. Maybe you still don't get it. And then a year later, you figure out how to do it because you've had time to work it out. But it's a creativity, I think, is a force to be respected and nurtured. And it's a thing where you can't ignore your impulses or your persistent thoughts. Meaning, there are things that I just have never said on stage that, like, I think about constantly and obsess over. And I'm like, why the fuck am I just not saying this? Because the other half of my brain goes, oh, because nobody would like that. That's not good enough. You're not good. And all the horrible self-talk. All that horrible chatter that enters your brain, you know, and that's, I think, really the big hindrance to creativity is the second thought that tells you it's not good enough. You don't have the time. But you have to be a perfect father, Roger. You don't have time to be a writer. You don't want your kids to end up like you, do you, Roger? You want to be perfect. And it's the perfectionism bug too, right? That steps in and tells you, but you've got to do this perfectly. And if you spend all your time making your kids perfect, you won't have time to do the other stuff. You know, and I've had to let go of being perfect with my son, with Ellis. I've had to let go and just realize, you know, for instance, they send you all these fucking newsletters. At least I signed up for these when I was pregnant. Every week they send you an update. Your baby this week is these developmental milestones, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, all right. So, and then it tells you how to play with your kid to foster these developmental milestones. This week, your kid can see patterns. So you need to jingle, you know, fucking patterned things in front of him to stimulate their eye. Like, oh my God. I mean, you got to be kidding me. And I found myself doing it in the beginning. Well, I've got to stimulate his eyesight because, well, you can see patterns this week, and I don't want my kid to grow up not seeing perfect patterns. And then you realize, like, you know what, man? My kid gets a thrill out of staring at the dog. My kid gets a thrill just sitting in his little bouncy seat and watching me cook. And he's probably, you know, just checking that out. And sometimes it's good for kids just to sit and fucking think. Let the kid just sit. Sit. Shut the fuck up. You have to stimulate the kid every 2 seconds, you know? God damn, whatever happened to just sitting and thinking in your own fucking thoughts? That's why this poor generation, this poor overparented helicopter parent generation, these poor kids don't have time to take a shit without their parents watching over them, scheduling playtime, scheduling shit time. Dear God, monitoring how they play. My friend Mary Lynn has a kid, and she told me one time the school calls her to tell her about how her kid was playing, what games he was playing, and how they didn't approve of the games. I thought, if my school calls me to ever tell me how my kid's playing this way or that way, I'm going to tell them to go fuck themselves and hang up on them. It's retarded. I don't know why. What do you care? What do you care? My kid's not hurting anybody. What do you care? But when we got to monitor kids, right? We got to fucking make them perfect. Anyways. It's a force, man. Creativity is a muscle like anything else. A lot of people will be like, oh, Tiger Woods was a genius golfer. Yeah, he also worked tirelessly. That guy started golfing at 4, right? Under his dad's tutelage. And yeah, there you go. And I'm sure he didn't have a perfect childhood. Nobody does. Everyone's got a story. And don't think you're exempt or special, because you're not. You know, and success at being creative, it happens in spite of your life. Not because of it, in most cases. I think everything you do is in spite of, never, I don't know, not because of, now, I don't know. Anyway, there's a few good books if you're wondering how to harness your creative juices, how to get going. It's this ubiquitous process. It's really personal. I don't think anybody has the same thing. So there's a book that I read many, many years ago that really helped me, called The Artist's Way. And it's a pretty thick, chunky book, and it's a workbook that actually helps you, you know, actual skills, like how to do this stuff. Sorry, my manager just texted me a picture of fan art that she received. One of them is a wooden etching of Hitler from your mom's house. We're on a Hey Hitler tear right now, and some guy I know who did it, is he sent me a nice little wooden etching of Hitler. Okay, maybe not put that one up in the studio, but it's funny nonetheless. Okay, The Artist's Way, there you go. the artist's way. You know, they encourage you to do things like morning pages, that book will tell you, which I think is a great way to figure out what your voice is. Some of you might be like, I don't know what my voice is. You're not going to know, I think, at least in comedy, for a good 7 or 8 years. But morning pages are this wonderful thing where you wake up, and I still do this today. That's why I write in the morning. Wake up and the stream of consciousness writing. You just take 5 pages, 1 page, whatever it is, and kind of write whatever it is in your mind that's in there. And you'll notice trends over time. You'll notice that you tend to obsess over certain topics and this and that. And that's kind of where your voice might be, I think. Great book, great book, great book. Also, you know what happened this past weekend? I was at the store, a comedy store, and I was, you know, like, I don't want to fucking perform. I don't want to do this. And I was watching other comedians. I was just sitting in the back. I was watching Kirk Fox. I was watching Joe Rogan. I was watching Dom Herrera and all these fun people who I love. And it got me inspired, you know, where you're like, okay, maybe I do want to be a stand-up tonight. And that's what I think, like channeling someone else's energy, or like with the Breeders, I channel the energy of Kim Deal. For some reason, that song puts me in a place that I can do shit in. And I think that's a huge thing when you're not feeling it. Maybe channel the energy of people that inspire you, or things that inspire you. That tends to help, right? That tends to help. Channeling energy is different than stealing. Do not steal people's shit. But there's an energy that you can kind of siphon if you're not generating it yourself that day. You can siphon just a little bit. Just a little bit to help jumpstart yours, but do not take their shit, obviously. Okay, channeling energy. We talked about that. Oh, yeah, so here's the thing. I wrote down, because, yeah, my kid has hindered some of the stuff I used to do. It has changed how I do comedy. It's changed how I live my life. It's changed how I sleep, how I eat, how I shit, how I do everything. And here's some stuff that I've learned from having a 3-month-old so far, which I think it's changed me in ways. Okay, here we go. Things I've learned from my son, Ellis, who is 3 months old. I've learned to slow down, because baby time is its own thing. It is its own thing, and you can't hurry a baby. You know, it's, for instance, if I'm doing something else, and I'm in the world of normal people, and then I come to my son and I want to feed him or hold him, my energy is significantly different then. And I have to take a breath and get down to baby time. Because baby time is, they're very in the moment dudes, you know? Their priorities are eating and pooping and kind of watching and just being. And it's kind of a zen cool thing. So you learn to slow it down, to take it there. And it's very peaceful. Baby time is a very peaceful pace. I can see why people like babies now, because they're just fucking chill. You know, they're just existing. They're tiny little Buddhas, and they just, you know, yeah. Anyway, nothing is as important as you think it is. I'll tell you that I look back now and I'm like, what the hell was I doing? I would say that 90% of the shit I did was a total waste of time. I don't know what I did before. I mean, I had so much free time. I should have just been in Bali surfing for the last 38 years. And instead, I filled my days with brunches and Crate and Barrel trips and internet surfing. Oh, the hours I would spend just looking at articles on the web. The top 12 celebrities whose bodies bounce back. Like, I mean, when I find myself doing that now, I have to be like, what are you doing? You're wasting your time. So I really learned how to prioritize, because, man, I wasted so much of my time. And now I don't have a lot of it. So when I do have it, I really get shit done, bros. Like, man, you know, I don't know why they discriminate against moms in the workplace, but you want to get shit done, hire a mom, because we fucking know how to get things done in a way shorter time than most people. I don't know what the fuck people do all day, 8-10 hours at work. Listen, you know it. I know it. Maybe the first 4 hours a day you do stuff and then you zone out for the next four. I know. And after lunch, that's another hour of surfing the net. When you come in, that's an hour of checking your email, surfing the net. Listen, don't try to pull one over on me. I know. I did the same shit. Moms. Moms could fucking rule the world. They know the value of 5 free minutes, boy. You do shit quick. Give me 10 minutes. I can clean the whole house, do all the dishes, do all the kids' laundry, fold it, let the dogs out, feed them, change the sheets on the bed. You know what I mean? Give me 10 minutes, bro. I got it down. Solve the world's problems. Write a stand-up set. I got it. I've also learned how to show up completely, which is another addendum to this. Showing up completely. What I mean by that is this little baby knows when I'm holding him and I am not paying attention. He knows when I'm looking at my iPhone and not paying attention to him, because he'll make sounds. Pay attention to me. He knows. And I think, well, how much other stuff have I been doing kind of half-assedly, kind of not showing up completely? And that's another part to creativity, is how much of that time when you sit down to actually write stuff or actually do things on your computer, how much of your time are you really spending doing it? Or are you looking at emails, surfing the web, jerking your dick? You know what I'm saying. A lot of us sit down and it's a fucking jerk fest. You're not really doing your work. You're not showing up completely. Yeah, I know that I wasted a lot of time on that, but also being 100% engaged in whatever it is you're doing. And if you watch, I mean, look, my only frame of reference is comedy or music even. If you watch the artists that you love, they're 100% in it. They're so immersed in the moment of what they're creating. They're not, at least from what I can tell, they're not thinking about, oh shit, I got to go home. I got to let the dogs out. The fucking dogs are going to got to eat. I got to set up the vet. I got to make an appointment, get my hair done. Like, no, all that stuff runs in the background, but it's put aside to do what the hell you got to do. I've also learned from my 3-month-old that a good meal and a nap are priceless. That's kind of it. You know, what else is there? I mean, I would put alcohol in here too and taking shits, but I think a good meal and a nap, fuck. You know, if you're bummed out and if you're really depressed, sometimes all you need is a nap to set you straight. I've seen it, you know, and a nap really is, you know what? I can't take this shit anymore. I gotta shut down for a little bit. Like, you're so overwhelmed that you gotta shut down. And you do a meal first and then a nap? Come on now. There's nothing better than that. I've also learned to ask for what you want loudly and clearly. Babies do that frequently, all day, every day. They ask for exactly what it is they want, and they ask for it very clearly. And when you don't give it to them, they get even louder. And that's a great metaphor for everything in life. Like, are you asking for what you want clearly? Just be clear in your language. And if not, shout that shit a little bit louder, dude. I mean, I've had to do it before and it kind of works. It's a great, great lesson. A dirty diaper shouldn't rattle your cage. My kid can sit in his own filth for really long. I got lucky that way. He doesn't cry over a pee-pee die-die or a dirty die-die. The kid just sits in it. And I'll be like, oh my God, did you... Why didn't you say something? Like, he's just chilling. And you got to realize, like, oh, this kid can really roll with the punches, you know? Like, yeah, doesn't faze him. He's just sitting his own shit for longer than he should, but yeah, big deal. And I really like that. It's a really philosophical, deep bro kind of thing. Yeah, so what? I got a dirty diaper. I'm just going to keep going, right? I'm going to create stuff despite my dirty die-die. Personal space is good. Sometimes my kid does not want me to hold him. Sometimes he needs to be in his own little bouncy chair. And I think that goes with all relationships. Sometimes you don't want to be with somebody. You want to be alone. And that's fine. That's great. God, being alone is tremendous. There are times with my husband, I know, I see it. He needs to be on his computer. He needs to do his bear things. And I let him. You got to let people do their thing, right? Personal space is key. Laugh. Kid laughs at stuff freely. Kids laugh, man. They laugh. They don't think about it. They just laugh. And I realize my son likes really base comedy, okay? Mom and dad don't make him laugh, put it that way. He likes, I don't know. He likes real big things, animated. Yeah, stop phoning it in. Wow. Oh, did I learn that from my kid? That might be another thing. Well, anyways, there you go. That's what I'm thinking about this week, anyways. I just realized maybe I've been phoning it in a little bit with stand-up. And then I was like, oh, I like this stuff. I enjoy this stuff. And also to be where you're at, Roger and everybody else. Just be where you're at. Listen, you're at the place in your life where you got two kids that suck your soul. And you don't have time to write. And maybe that's a kind of a neat thing creatively. Maybe that means that you restructure your life. Maybe you hire a sitter for an hour or two. I don't know, a week, so that you can sit down. Maybe you pawn those kids off on grandma and grandpa for a few hours and you do your shit. Like right now, my husband's watching our kid so that I can sit here and ramble to you. Does he like it? I don't know. I don't care. That's what I'm doing. That's his problem. There's always ways. There's always solutions. I think the devil here is the perfectionism of, yeah, but if I give my kids to the grandparents for a couple of hours, my kids will think I'm neglecting them and I won't be the perfect dad. You're not going to be the perfect dad. And you're not going to fuck up your kids. Trust me. If you're worried about fucking up your kids, you're not going to fuck up your kids. Just the fact you have that thought of, oh my God, am I ruining them? Trust me, you're not. People that ruin their kids don't even have the thought of, am I ruining this? They don't care. That's why their kids suck. And that's why they suck. Yeah. I can't believe so many dumb people have so many kids. I was thinking about this last night, that the dumbest motherfuckers are the ones that have so many. Like these Duggar people. Just multiple, 20 kids, 19. It's the people that care the least that have the most children. And the people that give a shit, they don't have 10, 20 kids. Because we know we actually have to pay attention to them and care for them. And that takes a lot of energy. Oh, and another thing. I should have had kids younger. I thought that if I delayed it, if I started my career first and then did it, it would be better. But the truth is, I should have had it at like 20. Because by now my kid will be more grown. Jesus Christ. Right? Yeah. Wow. And now is a great time actually to start doing things. Your 30s, right? Your late 30s is when you're a real person. And that is actually a good time to be in the workforce, to be doing things. Yeah. Eh, what do you know? But I was worried, right, that the kid would hinder my ability to be a comedian. And look, in some ways, it just changes how you do things. And I focus my energy other places. And is it really so bad that I'm not on the road anymore? Is it really so bad that I'm not in a hotel room on a Sunday looking at empty bottles of wine and containers of pudding and shaky cheese and thinking to myself, what have I done with my fucking life? What have I done? No, it's not so bad. This is much better for me. There's trade-offs in everything. There's trade-offs. And you got to work with what you got. And there's no perfect time. There's no perfect circumstances. You just got to work through your debilitating depression like Abraham Lincoln. Work through it, man. That's all you can do is work through it and use it and channel that shit. Channel the suffering. That's what they all did. All the greats, right? All the greatest stuff has been deeply personal and has channeled. That's why they say, write what you know. Write what you know. Look at Bukowski, one of my favorite writers. That guy, crippling depression, alcoholism, hated his day job. Bukowski worked in a post office. Was he nocturnal? I think. Yeah. Yeah, he was more or less. No, he worked as a postman during the day and then stayed up drinking and writing all night long. And by the way, even when he did kind of, quote, make it, and was making money, was still working at the post office. It's not like, you know, that first book hit and that guy quit. Like, it took a minute. Those are his own demons that he was fighting. Nonetheless, in spite of, in conjunction with whatever debilitating stuff you got going on. I remember I went to Montreal Comedy Festival this last year. I don't know if I told you this one, But the minute I landed in Montreal, I found out my mother died. And literally the minute my feet touched Canadian soil, they go, my husband told me your mom died. And I started laughing like, okay, that's funny. Where are we going to go for dinner? You know, I thought he was joking with me. And I remember thinking like, oh God, what do I do? Like, and for those of you who don't know, I did not have a normal relationship with my mother. We hadn't spoken in almost a decade. So she was mentally ill. And it's not like a normal thing. So don't think like, oh my God, what a monster. You know, like this woman didn't care for her mother. That's different. But I had a couple of choices. I could pack up and leave this festival with all my friends, my husband, and come home and sit alone and deal with her death. Or I could just fucking tell jokes for a few days, come home and deal with her death. And that's what I did. I stayed and I told some jokes. I took obviously some time down. I took a minute. But I remember, you know, telling jokes in the pain of my mother's death, in the weirdness of that was kind of good because, look, I was amongst friends. All my friends were up there. So it kind of distracted me. And when you find out somebody dies, there's a moment of denial. It took a while for me to really realize what had happened. And it was kind of a good thing to be in denial and do the things that I enjoyed doing. And I found that I told jokes a little differently that week in a good way. Because, you channel the sadness into whatever it is on stage, and it brings a little more honesty, a little more depth, a little whatever. And I know. So some people, I was kind of like, gosh, I didn't tell people what had happened. Only if like a handful of people knew that week. And I think it was kind of better that way. I didn't want people to be like, oh, poor Christina, blah, blah, blah. And then I have to explain to them, my mom was crazy. Don't worry about it. But I think that was a good decision. And even now, I still persist. I still create when things are bad. Not when I'm feeling shitty, but no, that's not true. Even when I was sitting in the nursery at 4 a.m. postpartum crying, I would still write jokes because what else am I going to do? It helps. It oddly helps. So there you go, guys. Listen, I hope you find your muse this week. Find your spirit animal. Find your fucking the thing that lifts you just a step higher. Because I know when you're in it, Roger and whoever else, and you're like, I can't do this. I can't create. Find your guideposts, the people that go that have done it in spite of. Again, for me, it's Phyllis Diller. It's Roseanne. It's, you know, whenever I think I can't do this, I can't. How can I have this kid or I have this thing? I always think of Phyllis Diller, Roseanne. I think of Nietzsche, and I think of Abraham Lincoln, because they all did shit despite. Yeah. So what's the theme of this podcast? Stop being a pussy and just fucking do it. Right? Like that meme on the internet. Just follow your dreams. Stop being a crybaby pussy or something like that. Pretty fucking good. Yeah. Suck it up, soldier. Suck it up and move the fuck on. And there you go. That's been deep, bro. I hope you have a fantastic week. I hope you find your inspiration, you find your muse, and you stick with her. She can be a fickle bitch. Yeah, and even create when you're not feeling it. Can I tell you? Even on the days where I'm not feeling inspired by anything, just write something down. Just write anything down on a piece of paper. Even if it's, I'm so fucking uninspired. And you know when I found that? When you're totally locked and you're like, nothing's coming. Stop beating yourself. Stop it. Stop flogging yourself and go outside. Go for a walk. Go eat ice cream. Go eat a cupcake. Go pet a dog. Go hang out with friends. That means you're not, you just stop. Just stop yourself. You can't force it. Yeah. All right, bros. Yeah. Have a great week. Do your thing and stuff like that. And I'll see you next week. And until then, that's been deep, bros.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with.
It's Christina P, a.k.a.
ain't Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house. It's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party, our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke, or was it Socrates? Aristotle or Plato, maybe Hippocrates. Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? That's deep, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life. And you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro.